Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We're routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to bed in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
You receive the atomic boot to the ass.
Thud. Oh boy, that sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Hey, hey, King Shazoo's the turtle. All
She fills the terrible and the knights of the round table.
We know it. says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind.
out a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I got our honorable knight Diadin on here. How you doing there, brother?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Well, you know, it's kind of, we had a little conversation before we come on air there. I was telling you, it's kind of hard to keep your chin up with everything that's going on in the world these days, you know, and you hit it right on the nail when you said that, you know, there's point in that whole mess where you just feel like you can't do nothing, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's the way it is sometimes, feels like.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when incidents like what's going on over there in Ukraine happen, it's like that ride that you take whenever you start driving home and the weather starts to deteriorate and you're really on edge, you know, you got your hand on the steering wheel and your eyes on the road and you're nervous because you don't want to crash your car or, you know, get anybody hurt or anything like that. You just want to make it home, you know, and that's exactly the way I feel right about now, is because, you know, I see all this stuff going on. Maybe nothing will come out of it. Maybe they'll back off and go on back home or whatever. You know, it's the meantime, in the meantime portion that keeps you on edge, because, you know, things could seriously deteriorate over there, sending us into World War III, and that's a war that nobody on this planet needs, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, hopefully cool heads will prevail. I don't think that anybody wants to blow anybody else up, as far as, we all share this world together, even if we are, you know, the most selfish, greedy jerk out there. We still kind of, you know... still on this world with...
Oh, yeah, we're all in the same boat together. You know, if you go out and look on my Google Plus account, you'll see a lot of comments that I've put out there to other people. There's some individuals that get on these deals when they start talking about how, you know, Russia and America's not getting along and all that, and they're talking about how, you know, Iran should just nuke America, or Russia should just nuke America, and you know, talking about how Russia could just go over and kick America's butt, you know, and this kind of stuff, and I'm trying to talk some common sense into these idiots, but most of them are probably provocateurs from, you know, government agencies. That came out here pretty recently, that there were agents getting on YouTube and social media networks and actually stirring the pot up with racism and everything under the sun. But so with that said, I went ahead and put the common sense comment out there anyway, and I'm sitting there telling them, I'm saying, look, you know, World War III starts... We all lose. I mean, has everybody forgot about MAD, you know, Mutual Assured Destruction, which essentially means that we will literally blow it up ourselves before we give it to anybody else?
Yeah.
And they figured that out? I mean...
No, we're all the same. I think we're all just little pieces of the same tree, you know. We're all little branches of the same tree. So you cut the roots and we're all dead.
Yeah. You know, and you got a lot of folks around the world worried about Fukushima. Fukushima pale in comparison to World War III. You know, That, of course, it's not good to crap your environment out like this is going on, you know, and things have to be addressed, but, you know, to just say, okay, well, let's all kick everybody's butt and whoever's standing gets to have the whole deal. It's kind of like that Metallica song, King Nothing, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
So you done blew it all up. What are you king of? Yeah. Okay. You're king of the dump, you know?
The wasteland.
Yeah.
We're just struggling to survive.
You know, and people, they laugh at conspiracy guys. They've been laughing at conspiracy guys forever and a day, but now all this stuff is actually starting to come out. The NSA is spying on people, you know. There is corruption. There is, conspiracies taking place. You know, they laughed and mocked and ridiculed those folks that tried to point all this kind of stuff out, and, you know, it really didn't hit home in the mainstream media until they realized, hey, their emails were being checked, too.
Yeah, I think the problem is you gotta find where the problem arises, you know, like in a math equation. You have to put in all the factors and then see, you know, work your way to the root cause, the root problem. And I think it's a pretty hard one. It's pretty deep.
Yeah.
And it's been deep inside our social structure. So
I'm not a doomsdayer by any stretch of imagination. I believe that, we should live our lives with common sense and not worry about everything coming down the road. Just keep our eyes peeled and try to steer whatever bad's coming our way off in the other direction. But also, on the same sense, I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, World War III couldn't happen, because I'm watching all these world leaders out there trying to cover their butts with the bank frauds that they've been doing all these years, and now they want to, you know, try to get us into a war. Whoever hasn't figured it out yet, wars make a lot of people money, man.
That's all it's about. That's all it's about.
Yeah.
Who's making the money? We don't even talk about that. I mean, America and Russia are the two top weapons suppliers in the world, basically. I mean, they support companies that are, you know, directly linked into the bank, and they get all this, you know, under the table money, as long as, you know, as well as like drugs and stuff like that. I mean, now we're holding hands with Afghanistan. Afghanistan's like 68% of the world's opium comes from Afghanistan. I mean, there's all kinds of, it's not conspiracy, it's fact. You just look into it.
Yeah.
Trace the money, if you can trace the money, and you'll find a lot of times the answer.
At one point, some of our soldiers were pissed off because they were like, why are we over here protecting poppy fields for Afghanistan?
Yeah.
You know? That's not what our soldiers were there for. Our soldiers were there for defense of the nation, not to go over and police the entire world. But it's changed, man. Even the mentality of the soldier has changed. It's incredible, you know. And those folks who are of true patriotic hearts, you know, who are trying to, you know, bring freedom to the world, some of them are duped into believing, you know, they're over there fighting for freedom and justice, and you see how they're treated when they come home.
Yeah.
You know, it's a damn shame. And for the most part,
those types of warriors, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, the newer future generation of warriors coming up, I feel like, you know, maybe it's another conspiracy in the making or already been made, but I feel like a lot of these doggone video games that the kids are playing today are training them to be, you know, killers.
In a way. I mean, there's something to be said in that, and then at the same time, you know, people like to escape this reality because it's kind of harsh, and sometimes they like to go into harsher realities where they can get their aggression out, and sometimes they like to go into more creative realities, you know, it's just playing into different thoughts, if you look at it, like, it's all a video game is, and then, of course, there's a money factor involved, too, but...
Well, in that point, I agree, but the only thing I'm saying is, you know, you got first-person shooter games going on, and these... people are actually being desensitized to murder, you know? I mean, remember back in the old days, you had little dots and dashes, and then they got it to a little bit better graphics, and it never was really, you know, blood and guts and gore and all that kind of stuff, but it just seems to me that it has intensified. I've seen some of these video games. My son plays them all the time. He knows the difference between reality and fiction and just does it for amusement purposes, but... You know, where's the line going to stop before it actually becomes so realistic that you can't tell the difference between, you know, killing a digital person or a real person? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, maybe it would be fun if I don't know if it'd be fun, but it certainly would be more progressive if we all just got on a video game and killed each other rather than doing it in real life.
Yeah, well, that would be, you know, if World War III was going to play out on a computer and the best man standing wins, and, you know, I guess that would be all right.
It'd be certainly be better than killing a bunch of innocents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing, though. It just... It's a, you know, I pay a lot of attention to what's going on in the world. I pay a lot of attention to the news, and if I'm feeling kind of down about the whole deal, I can imagine that a lot of people out there probably feel the same. You know, it's just it's continuous negativity, a stream of continuous negativity being coming towards people. You know, movies desensitizing the people to things that normally would be disturbing and stuff. You know.
Yeah, that's definitely a big. Oh, well, it's like I look at it like this: people are very much attracted to guttural feeling, you know, emotional intensity, and so things like fear play really well into the hand of making money, and so that's why a lot of mainstream media stuff, they fall into that fear-based type of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if you were even in the least wrong, there wouldn't be nobody riding roller coasters because everybody'd be too scared to get on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to push yourself and challenge yourself is excellent, but to propagate or to continue to put out just nothing but fear and you know, don't trust anybody, those types of things. I mean, you know, murderers and thieves and stuff like that. I mean, most of that is truly a product of all of us. You know, it's they've been conditioned according to their environment, and we're a part of that environment. So to just place blame on them and say that they're a bad person is kind of defeating the whole point. That would continue to create more murders. I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And besides that, in general, you know, murderers and rapists and all that kind of stuff, those are fewer and far in between. I mean, for the most part, there's people who are not like that. So to fear everybody just because of a handful of people, you know, it's kind of like the whole, you know, one bad egg ruins the whole bunch type of idea, you know.
Yeah, and I put a few comments that kind of resembling that you know, people are painted with a wide brush, you know, all religious people are painted with the same wide brush, black people, white people, you know, whatever. And you know, it's just, to some extent, I feel like, you know, we the people out here in the world are partially to blame, like in the conspiracy theory world, you know. It's it kind of feeds into the paranoia as opposed to just saying, look, hey, these are the facts, this is what I've discovered. You know, don't get paranoid over it, just try to do some research, and if we're right, we all need to act or something like that, you know, instead of putting it out with common sense. It's a kind of, you know, they're playing some music in the background to build up the drama, you know, this guy's coming to get us or whatever, you know.
Yeah, well, as far as the Ukraine goes, the last I checked, basically there is, and it's kind of like Germany in a way, except, you know, they're not under the rule of Russia. They're more, you know, under the rule of the Western side in a way, and the Eastern side basically wants to become part. There's people in the Eastern side of Ukraine who want to become part of Russia. So, you know, there's some extremists, like there is everywhere, who went to you know, a diplomatic building and raised the Russian flag, and so that's freaked people out or whatever. But both Russia and United States really don't want to get involved with it whatsoever. They would rather play out there. The only involvement they want, of course, like always, is a financial one, is a, you know, some type of resource harvesting, you know. So that's pretty much all that's been said now as far as the real nitty gritty details. I mean, the only people who know that stuff are the people pulling the strings, right? That's usually the case.
Well, yeah, and you're right. What should be going on with the mainstream media and the government in itself is a bit of honesty, you know. It's like, yeah, if something's going on out there, you come out, you tell the facts, you say, look, okay, I know we all know it looks bad, but this is the case, you know, like you said, Russia didn't want to get involved, America didn't want to get involved, but, you know, these are the kind of things that are forcing the hand of each country or whatever. But, you know, that would give a person some sort of hope that, you know, okay, maybe we can work our way through this kind of thing. But no, it's a come out, oh, hell, you know, Russia just invaded Ukraine, and now America's threatening Russia and all this kind of stuff, you know. And for the average Joe just watching this on TV, that can be terrifying, man, because you're talking about literally on the brink of World War III. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So there's got to be some sort of damn responsibility from the bottom to the top, you know. Somebody's got to use some common sense. I'm sitting here, I feel like I'm on the edge of the apocalypse, and I'm shouting out, you know, hey, can't we all just freaking get along for Pete's sake? You know, I'm trying to steer this giant boat, and I feel like a little squeaky toy in the midst of a giant freaking rock and roll crowd. You can't talk any common sense. Everybody's throwing up the sign of Satan, and you know, and they want to fight and everything else. And I'm like, oh man, peace and love, can't we all get along? And they're like, shut up, stupid. Or, you know, even if they I wish I had a freaking megaphone you know, about as large as the state of Texas, so I can just tell everybody, shut up, sit down for a second, let's talk common sense.
Yeah, yeah, you can't force people's lessons, you know. Everybody's learning their own, and you can't force them. All you can do is just try to be that beacon, that light, just spread as much light as you can, man, in the darkness. That's about all you can do.
The problem is, it takes us back to what you mentioned earlier. We're all in the same damn boat, while these guys are plugging holes, and we're trying to, while these guys are, we're putting our fingers in the holes that they just put in the boat, they're poking more holes, you know?
Yeah, but we're all going to die eventually, right? We're all going to go back to the source, or back to God, so.
Well, I agree.
It's a pretty intense thing, but.
I agree, but once again, it's like this. I got grandchildren, you know, and if the world continues on the path that it is on right now, my grandchildren ain't going to have much of a future. They ain't going to have much of a freedom. They ain't going to have much of nothing. They're going to be paying high this and high that and walking around with their little mark on their hand and all this kind of stuff. Now, I know, you know, a lot of people out there ain't religious, or, you know, I hate even using the word religion because...
Spiritual? I think everybody's spiritual.
Yeah, but, you know, in that book, it tells a story, you know, and I'm seeing everything out there in this world just it's mirroring what was said in that book, all right? Regardless of who wrote it, what, how, whatever, somebody a couple thousand years ago was wise. I mean, you know, they put they put the Ten Commandments in there, which are good rules to live by, and they also pretty much nailed it on the head as far as, you know, there'd be wars, rumors of wars, plagues, famine, pestilence, and dogs sleeping with cats and mass hysteria, you know. And so I'm watching that. I'm watching society, and I'm trying to say, oh, man, we got to do something here, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's been many teachers like that, many avatars, and many people who have written wonderful things, you know, channeling God, or, you know, just being very in touch, being very aware. And it's not, you know, Christianity is not the only one that has those, but definitely for Americans, it's something that we can relate to because it's so easily translatable.
Yeah.
Christ was, you know, according to what it seems like, to me, he was an amazing man. So if everybody lived their life like Jesus did, I mean...
Well, that's
certainly wouldn't be having these problems, that's for sure.
That's what I'm talking about. My version of Christianity isn't what you would find in your average church. My version of Christianity is just pretty much what you just said, is that I liked what the man said. I liked, you know, what the way that he walked his life and all that kind of stuff. And if I can walk as close to that as I can, you know, treating other people the way I want to be treated, so on and so forth, to me, that's what Christianity represents in my heart, anyway.
I agree, yeah.
And so with that said, you know, I don't force my beliefs on anybody, but if somebody asks me, you know, what my beliefs are, I'm going to share it with them, or if I feel like I've witnessed a miracle or whatever, you know. But, you know, it's just, it's got to have a line of common sense somewhere, and I just don't see it going on right at this point in time. I know the average Joe out there, the majority of all people out there, are good-hearted individuals that would give the shirt off their back to any race, you know. But you got people out there right now stirring the pot. I mean, while we're talking right now, somewhere on some social network, you got some black man so mad. I'm going to add Dublin to the call group here if I can. And you got some people out there that are trying to get people so mad at each other. Racial tensions, religious tensions, nation against nation, all this kind of stuff. And while we're down here trying to do things like the Knights of the Round Table, we got our backs up against the wall, you know. We have problems where people are literally jacking with the servers. They're literally interrupting our transmissions and doing all these things to keep us from saying what it is that we're saying, you know. It's like the whole alternative energy thing, you know, free energy. Whether you want to go from Stan Meyer's hydrogen to, you know, whatever. There's folks out there, believe it or not, that do not want these things out there in public because it's going to take money out of their damn pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's they're rooted in sin, which is you know, according to the Latin terms, sin means miss the mark, meaning like you're wrapped up in one thing, you're looking at one thing. You're not keeping an open mind and a clear mind and an open heart and a clear heart, right? So missing the mark in Indian, you know, in Indian culture and religion, it's the veil of Maya, which is the same thing. It's sin. And it's basically that you are wrapped in your head. You know, you think in your head so much that you forget that your heart is there, right? You're part of being. You're part of the source, as Tesla called it, or consciousness, or God, you know, there's many words for it, but or love is a wonderful word for it. But if you look at nature, and never mind all the crazy stuff that, you know, men and women do, you know, humanity, I should say. If you look at nature, there is beautiful patterns that are, you know, I mean, just look at like a flower, for example. This is coming from, you know, kind of a perspective of not labeling the flower as it is, but just looking at the flower and just not even thinking about it, but just appreciating the flower as it is. I mean, when you walk by a flower, you're not really thinking about it. You smell it. It's aromatic, and it's expressing itself in a certain way, right? I mean, just if you think about those really basic natural developments of beauty, and that's where I think that we kind of forget to look at. You know, we get so wrapped up in our own heads. In our own ego. Everybody has an ego, but not everybody recognizes their ego. They think that ego is them.
Well, on that point, you know, I look at the world a whole lot different than most folks out there. When I look at this world, I see the most amazing beauty that you can possibly imagine. I see the most impressive piece of machinery in the history of time. You know, it's a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. It's a self-contained biosphere. It has all the resources necessary to solve all the issues of man. As far as the only one issue that nature can't solve is the greedy nature of man that would be willing to you know, kill just to, you know, profit or whatever. So when I look at the world, I'm like, you know, it's kind of like this. Let's say you just got through painting this really super beautiful painting, you know. I mean, it was the most amazing painting that I ever seen in my entire life. And I mean, I just like, I fell in love with this painting. You did better than Michelangelo and Leonardo and all the big name painters. It was just amazing. But when you looked at this painting, you saw something wrong and it pissed you off and you just decided, okay, I'm just going to destroy it, you know. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to see that thing get destroyed. I'd have to snatch that painting and run off.
Well, right and wrong is relative to perception. You know, it's just like the same problem we have with religions is people interpret it different ways, and people think things are right and wrong. And but right and wrong are created in your mind, in your ego. That's you know, and we think that's who we are, and we are unwilling to change. But really, right and wrong are both necessary in development, and when something's wrong, sometimes it's more beautiful that way. know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that, literally, from my own personal beliefs, I think that we were put here to learn and to be servants to one another and caretakers of all the land and animals and all that kind of stuff. And with that said, I think that society as a whole, mankind as a whole, not as individuals, because there's a lot of individuals that don't, but there are, society as a whole has failed miserably because we're still killing each other. We're still stealing from each other, robbing and cheating on our wives and abusing one another and the animals and the land and all this kind of stuff. And to me, I'm like, I must be insane because I keep on repeating the same damn thing over and over again and still coming up with the same damn results. Is that I believe in a better world. I believe that we as humans have potential to go so far. I mean, whether it be technology, creating a world, a literal heaven on earth or a utopia, so to speak, because we're all working together as one, you know, not under some one world government, under a one united people, you know, where we all had common sense and we knew that, you know, these certain things lead down the wrong path, and we teach our children from day one, you know, this is what we've seen in history, and this is what we don't want to repeat. This is why we do what it is that we're doing today. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. You know, change is a tricky thing. I mean, it's not tricky. It happens naturally, but to go with the change or to move with it to where it's, you know, feels comfortable, it's difficult. It seems like sometimes, and people are a lot of times fighting against it. But you know, if I think actions speak a lot louder than words, you know, and so the mind has a tendency to say the same things over and over again, but nobody really sees anything until there's an action involved. So well, you know, by you putting out those alternative energy, you know, by you doing the experiments that you're doing and stuff like that, those actions are powerful, you know. So if we as a people start to become more self-sufficient, you know, and we start to work with the land to you know, make, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of permaculture, but it's an interesting science to look into. It's, you know, the science of naturally occurring patterns in nature and stuff. And there's all kinds of, I mean, like you said, nature provides us with all we need. It's just a matter of adapting to those changes, you know, and moving with the changes of nature and what naturally is there, you know. Well, even if you look at a garden, we compartmentalize a garden, you know, we cut it all up and make it all into these little squares, like here's your tomatoes and here's your squash, and we put them all separate, but really in nature everything interacts with each other and it makes it a much stronger organism or a much stronger environment.
Yeah, and I understand that not everyone who plants the seeds is actually going to live long enough to see the fruits of their labor. And so with that said, what we're doing I know is a very important thing, even if we may not live long enough to see that the actual change occurs. And so, you know, with that said, I think we still need to keep on rolling. I need to take a quick break, so I'm going to throw on a tune, one that represents what I've been saying, you know, the way I feel anyway. And so, you know, with that said, I'll throw a couple tunes on. We can go freshen up our coffee and such. What do you think?
That sounds good. I didn't make any. I should probably make some.
All right. We'll be back, folks. Peace and love.
Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
I like that last song, Flirt with Disaster, because it's pretty much what humanity, in my opinion, is doing, you know. Regardless of your spiritual beliefs or whatever, you know, if we keep going on the same path that we're on, we're heading for sure destruction. You know, I'm probably one of the most controversial Christians out there in the whole world because I don't believe that the Bible's written in stone. Now, you can take the Bible for whatever you want, you know, as far as it, well, how you think it came to be or who wrote it or who didn't write it. I'm like this. It's, you know, I'm a father and I've got four children. And I, when I leave my house and I'm heading off to work, I tell my children, you know, these are my sets of rules and don't break these rules and make sure the house is in order when I get home and behave yourselves. And so, you know, with that said, you know, I leave the house and I come back and my house is a wreck and the kids are fighting and everything's a mess and, you know, old dad blows his stack. And so I'm thinking, you know, on the long of the line of the Bible, the way the Bible was written, that, you know, it says that, you know, it tells a story from the beginning to the end. And at the end, we're talking about, you know, Armageddon and, you know, God coming back and destroying all evil and all that kind of stuff. And so no matter how you look at it, even if you're not a believer and you see the path that we're going on down this road, you know, nature has a tendency to balance itself out. And so with that said, if you get out of line, nature will literally kick your butt. And so no matter from which angle that you look at it, the same story applies in all different directions. Whether you're a believer or a non-believer or whether you just go by the whole thing that we're all in the same boat, and if you keep poking holes in the boat, when we all sink, it's going to be all of us, not just a certain group of individuals that's going to sink. The whole thing's going down. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm looking at the Bible. It says that all these things are going to come around, but I, as a father, if I come back and my kids are doing what they were supposed to be doing, the house is in order, everything's just the way that I would have wanted it from the get-go, I'd be pleased, and I'd not mop everybody. And so, to me, to everyone else out there, when I say that, you know, that sounds controversial, you know, but, you know, if you're God, then you have the capability to change your mind and not kick everybody's butt when you come back if everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. But you always got one bad apple in the group that wants to, you know, fight and fuss and do whatever, you know. So, with that said, there's good in the world, there's evil in the world, and trying to balance the two out to bring about a utopia or a heaven on earth is a task of epic proportions. And so, as I am sitting here watching the world, and I'm shouting, hey, you know, look, there's a better way, there's something, you know, you guys are going to destroy it all, you know, and nobody seems to be listening with exception of a few people around the world. I feel like I'm at the edge of that dike, and I got my finger in the hole, and there's like a million more holes popping out, and I'm running out of fingers and everything to try to plug these holes to save all humanity. I know the whole world, the weight of the world isn't supposed to rest on my back or my shoulders. But me personally, I'm like a sponge. When I'm around negativity, I feel negative. When I'm around positivity, I feel positive. And even those New Ager spiritualists can agree that, you know, positivity breeds positivity, negativity breeds negativity. So we're really not that far off from what I believe as opposed to what they believe, you know. And so with that said, I'm just trying to do the best job I can with what tools I have available. If I could stand before all of the nations of the world, the world's elite, I would say the same things to them that I'm saying to each and every one of you right now. You know, I'd be the one saying, can't we all just get along? You know, look, there's a better way, you know. Instead of blowing each other up, why don't you go over there and build each other up? Why don't you go feed those hungry kids that the mainstream media has been pointing out all these years? These babies are starving. You got all this money that we've given you via our taxes and our labors and all that. Instead of you spending our money to go out and blow things up, why don't you spend our money to go out and build things up? Does any one of the knights disagree with that?
I don't disagree with that at all. I got some figures I can help with.
Yeah, you're on the mark there. Keep going.
Well, you know, I just... Love don't cost nothing, you know? There's no price tag on love. You can't buy it. You can't sell it. You can give it away and keep on giving it away, and you still have it, you know? And so with love, you can't get rid of it. As long as it's truly in your heart, and that's the way, the kind of person that you are, whether you're a Christian or a Buddhist or a Muslim or whatever, if you're walking the path of your prophets from whatever religion, you know, if I'm walking the path of Jesus, I would say, you know, like the old saying, what would Jesus do, you know? Okay, I don't think he would go over and punch this guy in the eye, so I'm not going to do that, you know? You see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah.
To me, it's just common sense, you know. And the reason why I call my YouTube channel Mad Science is because it really frustrates the crap out of me to see that the modern day kids coming up out of school, they're not being taught real science. Back in science school, when I was going to school, we really did science projects. We really learned science. And nowadays, they're sitting there spewing out some sort of corporate propaganda to these kids, telling them what they need to know, or what they want them to know, as opposed to what they need to know. Imagine how far we could be advanced technologically wise, or as a society, had they would have said, look, this is all the stuff that we've learned in the past, and we're going to teach this to you, and we're going to let you decide what you think from there, and get those minds ticking. Right now, you got kids that are sitting in school that are so freaking bored out of their doggone mind, because what they're teaching the grade school kids is like college educated indoctrination crap, you know? Show these kids some science. I mean, have them do little experiments. Show them and get them to asking why these things happen.
It depends on the teacher, too, the individual, you know? It always comes down to the individual, so... Why I think that you're, for the most part, true, most at least in America, you know? It's not always the case, but there is a lot of... there's a lot of teachers that are fighting... I don't know if fighting is a good word, but are up against the wall with all this, you know, curriculum that they're supposed to teach, things that they have to teach. You know, the kids have to know this and this and this in order to pass the grade that they're in. So, and if that doesn't happen, then you, the teacher, will be held responsible.
Yeah.
And funneled up from that is money incentive. You know, if we won't make our budget if this amount of kids don't pass.
And so a lot of kids are graduating that can't even read.
Like I said before, I think that is there's a bigger problem that Jesus spoke about, and that is the problem of gold before men, you know, the idea that money is more important than love, you know, and that has become the ideal. Money is more important than existence, than consciousness, and being, living things, you know? Material things trump living things, and that's kind of what's been told to, especially in America, it's been told over and over again, you know, and it's just slowly decaying of us.
You know, at some point, you know, I hate to say it, but it would almost be beneficial if the world did have some sort of major calamity to where they were forced, literally forced, to work together or die. I mean, it'd almost be in the benefit of society to do that, because if you look what's going on right now, everybody's running amok. It's like chickens with their head cut off. Nobody wants to sit down and look down the road and say, look, hey, on the path that we're going, I see some bad stuff coming, and listen to one another and try to avert that calamity. But the way it's going right now, society's been deteriorating. People are being desensitized to smut, filth. You know, it's just so much negative being pumped out there, and it's all backed by the almighty dollar. Somebody's making money off of fear. Somebody's making money off of porn. Somebody's making money off of death and destruction and disease. You know, it's like you go listen to these commercials, and they talk about, here's a drug for impotence, all right? Well, okay, that's nice. Now somebody can get all happy and everything. But wait a second.
Take a drug for that.
They start reading the side of the possible side effects off of there.
Yeah.
You know, and the possible side effects not excluding death. Why would you put that out there with that option of dying? There's a possibility somebody could die from this, and you're going to put it out there anyway?
Well, it's kind of like putting a Band-Aid over a knife wound, you know? If you're cut deep, you should probably figure out who cut you and how you got cut and all that stuff before you start trying to put a Band-Aid on it. You know, the Band-Aid is going to fall off, so...
Yeah, they essentially treat the symptom and not the cure. And
exactly. It's like Socrates, I believe it was Socrates, said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yep. Well, you know, that's the kind of education I could support, to show people how to prevent, you know, things from happening to them, to teach people the basic science on how, you know, diseases happen. There's a book out there that I have, to this day, have not been able to get my hands on, but it was a book written by I think her name is either Lorraine Day or Lorraine Davis. She wrote a book called Diseases Don't Just Happen, and she breaks it down specifically in there why diseases happen, because your body's a chemistry set, you know, and if you throw that chemistry out of whack, then your body has to try to compensate. It's like, you know, the whole, you know, the Lay's potato chip thing. You can't just eat one kind of thing, you know.
Because that's how they make it.
Yeah. See, if you get your body so used to this amount of sugar, and then suddenly you don't have that sugar anymore, it's like the reason why people get fat is because, you know, whenever they go on these starvation diets, and then the body starts to get panicked because, hey, I'm not getting all the nutrients that I was getting, so it starts to store it in fat. And so the moment they start eating again, when their diet fails, it boomerangs on them. They gain more weight than they had lost to begin with. And so, you know, these are basic concepts that nobody pays attention to, but they will sell you some caffeine-laden freaking energy pills from hell that will keep you all jacked up and make you feel like you not want to eat and all that kind of stuff. But essentially, all you're doing is getting high. You're not, it's not doing anything for your body weight. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And it's education nowadays, like we have, you know, it's kind of the golden age of knowledge, but there's so much to siphon through. You know, you got to really be really due diligent to find the actual facts and go over it again and again and again. But there's, you know, have you ever heard of Max Gershon?
Uh-uh.
Well, he's a German, he's basically a doctor in biochemistry or something, you know. And back in the 40s, he basically said he knew how cancer started and how to prevent it and how to cure it if it did continue on. And of course, he was completely shut out of all the medical journals and stuff like that, because guess what his cure was? It was nature. It was taking in lots of raw vegetables and juicing them and going on just a complete raw, you know, raw foods diet, and then taking lots of potassium and stuff like that to help get those free radical cells, you know, the cells that are going out of control because they're, you know, they've been mutated and they don't know and your body doesn't know where the hell to put them, you know, so, you know, to flush those out of your body. And there's tons and tons of documentation of, you know, that working, you know, it actually works. But it's not embraced in the United States sciences for the most part.
Well, they should embrace every single possibility for any cure, such as,
you know, there's no money in that. They can't make it. They can't make a drug out of, you know. The thing is holistically, like a piece of kale or a piece of cabbage or lettuce or whatever vegetable or fruit or any raw food you want to look at is designed perfectly as is, with a balance of nutrients and minerals all working together for the best delivery of those nutrients and minerals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we try to separate all of them and put it in like a multivitamin, and then you're not getting the nutrients. Like, for example, iron and vitamin C, they go hand in hand. If you want good vitamin C delivered you need iron to go with it because it helps enrich your blood, so the vitamin C will stay and you don't just pee it out.
Well,
you
know, one of the things on the vitamin issue is the way that they actually put these vitamins together. The most of the vitamin doesn't even dissolve in your digestive system. It goes out the other end, and you know, it just it's a whole waste. The delivery system's not good.
Yeah, and well, I mean, liquid vitamins are a little better, but still, you know, you get a nutrient dense, you know, vitamin shot, and your body's not going to digest it all properly if there's not a nice balance of fiber and other things, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, Gershon, he passed away, but his daughter still carries on his legacy. But she can't even practice her treatment in America. She's down in Tijuana because America has a policy of the only way to treat cancer is through surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy and drugs, you know.
That's crazy. And Dr. Royal Raymond Rife showed how to do it with radio frequencies, you know.
Light. Yeah. That's another full example. But even he said, you know, it's a combination of things. The light helps. It's another tool we can use. But you have to put the right things into your body so the light absorbs, you know. And you eat certain colors that absorb to, you know, that you're attracted to because your body is telling you need those types of vegetables or fruits. And he was even an advocate of that same principle. You know,
back on to what you were saying a second ago about weeding through all the mess, trying to find the right solutions for each and every individual and diseases and such. I liken it back to, you know, when you raise your kids up. If you teach your kids to clean the room as they go, then they won't find themselves to a point where the entire room is such a doggone mess that it's so overwhelming that they don't want to do it, you know. And so, with that said, you take when you start teaching these kids from the get-go, all the possibilities, there's less likelihood of them having to have to weed through the mess to find out. You know, suddenly they come up with cancer. Now there's this overwhelming task of figuring out, okay, what's the best treatment for me? Well, they're reliant on the doctor. They got to go to the doctor, and the doctor knows best, obviously, because he's been doing it for years. But maybe the doctor doesn't know best because that same doctor, he wasn't cleaning his room on the way through. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's conditioned, being conditioned to think a certain way. And thoughts are very, thoughts are collective, always, even if we don't think they are. I mean, like you were talking about earlier, if somebody's always being negative in their thoughts and always thinking, you know, it's the end of the world, or, you know, or I don't like what that person's done, you know, those things rub off on other people, and those thoughts turn into feelings, and the feelings are shared with everybody, because we're all connected. Even if we feel like we're separate from everybody, and we isolate ourselves, you know, you're that kid in the room who's just depressed, and because you understand the world's falling apart and there's nothing you can do, so you have only a couple options, you know, and you think about suicide and all that kind of stuff, you are connected. You know, don't feel like you're separate. Just go out and talk to somebody, and somebody will reach their hand out. It's the same principle of this conditioned idea of thoughts being separate. So,
well, I feel like that every time we lose one living soul, we lose a big chunk of humanity. But I had a point there I wanted to make. Doggone it, my brain just shut down on me.
As far as the cleaning the room thing, I think that's a lesson that I'm still learning. That's rough with my kids, man.
Well, it's a basic example of what we should have been doing from the get-go. You know, you start teaching kids real science and real solutions from the get-go, and it's going to have to benefit society as opposed to what we're doing right now. And as far as the whole medical world, you know, it's mind-boggling to me that people would try to destroy the immune system while, you know, try to destroy a cancer cell while at the same time trying to destroying the immune system with chemotherapy, you know. If your hair's falling out, then something isn't right.
Yeah, yeah, it's probably a pretty good indicator.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it goes back to, like, bloodletting and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of like in it's like privilege, you know, or I've got this doctor, done all this study and research, and so this is how it is, and that's not very scientific. If it was truly scientific, you would do the research and make sure you cover all the bases and backtrack and look and see and holistically, not just in one area. You know, okay, so the cancer is gone here, but what about the rest of the body? I mean, the body is connected all over. It's not just in one particular place.
Yeah, and with that, With that said, I just remembered my point. You got a lot of people out there talking about all kinds of different stuff, and you'll see arguments out there on YouTube or whatever. Somebody comes up with a natural cure idea, and they happen to mention it or whatever, you know. And then you got some other knucklehead over there, because they've been to college, they think they know it all, that are willing to totally disregard what this individual said, and, you know, oh, you're stupid, you're wrong, and all this kind of stuff. Well, how about this? How about both of them sit down and have a common sense discussion and weigh out the facts together in a peaceful manner, to which they can figure out, hey, you know, something that you said about the vegetables having the right delivery system for these particular vitamins could go along with the part of, if I take away this part of my medical procedure and add what you got in there, I think we can actually cure cancer. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, exactly. A progressive discussion instead of a destructive one, you know?
Yeah, and what...
Moving forward.
What do they have to gain by sitting there, you know, cutting each other down and all that kind of stuff? They ain't got nothing to gain. It might be them personally that has the cancer one day.
Yeah. Well, it's it's like I said earlier, it's the ego thing, you know? It's just they don't recognize their own ego, and so they you know, are using it constantly, you know, their ego as, you know, your mind recognizing itself, you know? Because I kind of look at it this way, like, life is becoming self-aware, like, you know, creation, evolution, they're the same thing. It's just a re-stirring of self-awareness, just... It's beautiful. It's hard to describe. You know, it's something that you can only kind of just feel, I guess. But, if you get wrapped up in your ego, it makes you feel better when you tell somebody, oh, no, that's not right. You know, you're wrong, because then you're basically creating a higher and lower, and you're making yourself, you know, I'm better than you are in a way. You know what I mean?
Well, we need to invent an anti-ego ray and go around zapping everybody.
Well, ego is important too. I mean, it's not that it's a bad or good thing. It's just it's there, you know, and people don't recognize it. I mean, if you have a tiger chase, you know how we slowly developed it is, you know, some people say it's based in your lizard brain, which is like, you know, your right on the top of your spinal cord, you know, the lower part of your brain. It's your really basic root instincts, and you know, so you. You see a tiger, and the tiger looks hungry, and it's stalking you or gonna chase after you. I mean, you got choices. You either fight it or run, and so fear and the recognition that you're alive, and, you know, your ego and everything is what keeps you alive and preserves yourself. So it's definitely not a bad thing. It's just if you don't look at it, if we want to evolve as a species, we can't continue to go down that path, because as you can see, look at what's happening.
Yeah,
with the world.
Yeah. Did we lose Dublin?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, I like I say, I just trying to balance out all the madness in the world. I talk to atheists and Christians alike, and I point something out that, you know, it doesn't matter who's right or who's wrong. At the end of the day, we're all still in the same boat. If you look at it, science is based on theory. Theory can't be 100% proven, and anybody who believes that it can be 100% proven hasn't studied quantum physics enough, because once you start looking into inner space, the deeper you go into inner space, you start getting into a world where the basic laws of physics don't even apply, because now you got things appearing and disappearing where, you know, they weren't there before, or viewed by the perception of the individual who's actually watching the thing, and so, you know, that can't even be explained, all the way back to the singularity, where everything came from one little tiny smaller space, tinier than an atom, and suddenly poof, the whole entire universe was created. And so that by its own definition is magical, you know. And so whether you believe in a divine intervention or just a magical poof out of the sky, neither theory nor faith can be proven to its fullest extent, you know, outside of you know, God showing up and standing right next to me and me saying, hey, look, man, Diadem, there's God. You see, I told you I was right. You know, I can't do that. But by my faith, And the theory, I just go by the perceptions of my own personal spiritual journey, so to speak. And so with that said, I don't go out there and argue with the atheist over whether there is or isn't a God. I just go out there and point the common sense out that the same science that they're using to degrade me and the disrespectful way that they're degrading me, you know, it don't make no doggone sense because they can't prove theirs either. If they're wrong when we're gone, then none of us are going to know who was right and who was wrong. We're just dust. We're gone. If I'm right and when we go, then, you know, things will be different. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. So, well, you know, theory and faith, they're not really too far. They're not very, very different from each other. If you say theory and belief, those are quite different. But theory and faith are quite similar. And you know, even in outer space, like you're talking about going into space and things just flash in and out, like dimensionally or whatever, it gets really crazy. Even in outer space now, you know, you have black matter and black energy and these things that are so massively large that they're not, we can't really perceive them, and we consider them to be dark, you know, dark matter or dark energy. But the only reason why they're dark is because we haven't become aware of them yet. You know, they're so massive, we're not aware of them. You know.
Well, I think science and spirituality can go hand in hand, and I'm not talking about like a religion like Scientology, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I'm saying science can explain how things work to our understanding, and religion can keep hope and faith alive, and a little bit of, you know, morality, so to speak, or whatever. You know, the two can go hand in hand, and so I don't see any reason why to discount anybody, because a lot of the science guys that I know out there, they're really brilliant, intelligent individuals, and at some point, I think that some people get so. Maybe it's part of the ego thing, but they get so intelligent that they think they have everything figured out, when in fact that everything that they have based their education on is basically theory. Basic stuff people made an observation. You know, 9 times out of 10, this one result continues to happen. Only 1 time out of 10, there's this weird anomaly, and it's probably just in the measurement or whatever, you know, and they just gaff that off.
The numbers, right?
Yeah, I don't want to gaff either one of them off. I want to know both sides of the story. I want to. We've got Dublin back. Hopefully, he can. All right. He's. How you doing there, Dublin?
I'm doing good.
We keep losing you, brother. But you see what I'm trying to say here, man?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's It is, you know, it's funny because our perception is human. You know, I can say that pretty. I mean, unless somebody else is listening, I don't know about. But for the most part, our perception is human, and in so we only can see things from a very small spectrum. You know, a very one point of light, which is an earthen one. It's Earth is what we've been created by. According to how we know things now, you know, and so we can only see things from one lens, you know. So it makes it difficult sometimes when people get wrapped up in what they've learned their entire life to take a step back and look at the bigger picture and see that everybody contributes to the same lens, you know, that same principle. So long as they're giving some type of progressive, you know, some type of constructive statements and really researching and are passionate and love what they do, and they're just contributing, then you know, we can all work together, like you say, to build us up, to and not forcefully, but you know, just naturally come together like a tree, you know. Or there's tons of examples of it in nature, but
yeah. Well, with that said, then why couldn't evolution and divine creation, or you know, be why couldn't they both be right? You know,
I personally think they are. I mean,
even if you say
intelligent design, I mean, what is evolution? It's intelligent design.
Yeah, even if you say that, you know, aliens came down and created us, it still poses the question, who created the aliens?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Same thing.
So it's like a conundrum, man. You know, a riddle within a riddle with a.
I don't think the mind can really grasp it. I think it's something that you can only feel, you know. It's like love. You can only just feel it, man. It's just,
It's a conundrum plus a conundrum plus an enigma, you know.
A question. Yeah, Pandora.
Yeah. So with that said, why in the hell waste all the time that we've got by you know, sitting there bickering back and forth over things that nobody can prove, because nobody has been to the edge of space, nobody has been to the center of the inner universe. And so with that said, who has the answers? I got my best guesses from everything that I've experienced throughout my entire lifetime. That's all I got, you know. You know, that I'm willing to admit to you that I don't know it all.
Yeah.
So
I definitely don't.
But
I'm glad too. If I knew everything, it would be kind of boring, don't you think?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. But you know, here's the thing. It all falls back to the same doggone thing. We're all on this beautiful rock. We're all in the same boat, flying through the same space. We all have to live here together or kill one another. And so, to me, if I was God and I created this massive experiment, or even if I was an alien and I created this massive experiment and I put all these different races down here and was watching just to see, you know, whether they would destroy themselves or figure it out that, you know, the true enlightenment means that you come together and you work and you create a literal heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. You gave them the tools, you gave them the technology, you gave them everything that they needed to do it, and so the question is, will they become enlightened, and will they do the right thing for one another and stop the wars and all the stupidity and use everything to its fullest extent, or will they destroy itself? And then if they do destroy it, and you decided, well, I run it one time, maybe I'll run it again. Poof, throw it down there again, all right? And the same result comes over. How many times do we get, you know? 4 out of 5? Best 2 out of 3?
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe 1 out of 10. 1 out of 10 species actually, you know, learn to adapt according to what's naturally there, and they don't fight it, and they, you know... In my personal belief, if aliens do exist, I definitely think that life probably exists out there, just because of the sheer immense size of our universe that we can even see. There is definitely tons of possibilities of it. But if aliens do exist and they could travel far, far distances, they wouldn't be fighting each other, because how would they get that far in their, you know what I mean? They might. If they were like a predatorial species, right, like kind of like we are, and very much separate and always fighting themselves, they would get very little done, kind of like we do, and they wouldn't be able to get off their planet except for maybe in small isolated cases, right?
Well, when you talk about the vast numbers of stars and galaxies in the deal, I quote something from the Bible, and I'm not exactly sure exactly where it was, but it says, "In my house are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place where, if you believe, you can be there also." I'm just paraphrasing because I don't remember exact deal, but essentially, if you think about a divine creator and his mansion, is the universe, you know, and out there in the universe is many mansions being created, and so that tells me that there is more out there than you can possibly imagine. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and I know this is kind of mind-blowing, and like I kind of look at it as infinite. There's infinite possibility, right? And that's what imagination is all about. That's like the love, the driving force, consciousness. It's just infinite, and so it's very hard to put into words. But if you can look at it this way. Let's say you're lighting up a cigarette, right? Well, one of those sparks that came off that lighter
could be us.
It could be exactly. It could be a whole other galaxy, and though it may be a flash in the pan for you and very small time frame, for something that is incredibly tiny, that could have been billions and trillions of years, you know. And I know that's really mind blowing, and oh my god, you know,
but
that's way
you're
out
right.
There, but scientifically, I mean, there's nothing saying that it couldn't be. You know?
We could be the spark off of a campfire some trillions of light years away and already be gone and just be an echo of what we just said, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, but all we truly have is the present, right? And that's why we called it the present, because that's what it is. It's a gift. We're conscious right now, so... And as far as when we die, that's speculation, but Energy never disappears. It just changes.
According to the laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, which means that we've been here all along.
Yeah. Yep. Just changing states, just evolving, so to speak, or intelligently designing through self-awareness, you know, becoming more and more self-aware.
I got to take another quick break. Would you like some music?
Sure.
All right. We'll be right back, folks. Peace and love. Stay tuned. Everybody, we're back. So Dublin, how's life on your side of the planet?
Well, it's lovely and warm.
You just cut out on us again.
I gotta tell you all about how now.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Yikes. Somebody's stealing your bandwidth, Dublin.
It's a cyber cafe. That can happen. Can you pick me up at all?
Yeah, hurry up. Talk fast. Oh, man.
Bomber.
Yeah. Not.
He's in.
Every time he talks, he cuts out.
Yeah, he's in, he's out, he's in, he's out.
Okay.
Maybe we should ask him a question, then he can just answer yes or no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Is Spain beautiful right now?
Yep.
We got that one.
All right.
Nod your head for yes and wave for no. This reminds me of a cell phone commercial. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Yes. Yes. We got a yin.
Well, try calling us back, Dublin, to see if that makes your connection better. Hey, maybe Donovan, if you add him to your call.
Okay.
Maybe that'll help out. Anyway, you know, folks, it just all basically comes down to common sense, you know, and empowering each other to believe in oneself and to... you know, just do the right thing when you got the opportunity to do so. You know, it's as simple as that. You know, right now, looking out into the world, it seems to me like all hope is lost. And I'm not willing to lay down and give up. I'm not willing to just say, you know, to heck with it. I can't fix it, so not do nothing or not say nothing. You know, saying something is doing something. You know, they say talk is cheap, but talk isn't always cheap. Sometimes you got to find the right words to say to the right people to get the world motivated towards the right direction. And so we need people saying things in all different directions. We need people writing letters to important people and trying to get them motivated or whatever. We can't just sit idly by and say, well, you know, it's all a mess, so there's nothing we can do about it, so I'm just going to go about my life and live in my little bubble. I mean, I guess, granted, that would probably be all right for you if, you know, you didn't care that your grandchildren were going to grow up in a world that was a mess. You know, it's just, you know, what do you do? What do you do?
You can be a shining example, be a beacon of hope. You know, if you stay open, you know, and communicate to the world still, but you use actions as your main communication tool, you know, besides words, obviously, too, but, you know, actions sometimes speak much louder than words. So if you were to create this beautiful landscape at your homestead, you know, and create, you know, an abundance, you know, all self-sufficient, off the grid, and just a complete abundance, and you show everybody, look, this can be done, and it's quite simple. You know, I mean, it takes work, it takes some hard work, but you know, once you get involved in that, you don't need to depend on the system anymore. And if everybody started doing that and changed themselves, then the world would change. You know, because change always comes from within. You know, every great spiritual avatar has taught that. You know, change. If you want to change the world, you change yourself.
Yeah, and so with that said, us getting up early in the morning and getting here doing this radio station, you know, it's not a waste of time. As long as we're putting some hope and some peace and some love out to the world, some common sense ideas, you know, being self-contained and not reliant on any government entity, that's your best go, because they'll tell you right out of the gate, they can't help everyone, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you're relying on, you know, some natural disaster happening, the government's going to rush in to save you. One has only to look back into history and see how that went for them, you know.
Yeah, that's a great.
Not so good.
Authority,
you know?
Government and authority are wonderful at making restraints and control and you know, this is how things should be, but they're not very good at giving help where it's needed. If we directed all of our attention, instead of external battles over resources, if we directed all of our attention to home, you know, because if you look at our budget, like if we do look into the economic side of things, if you look at our budget, we're spending most of our money in military spending. You know, if we were to focus that energy at home and show the world, hey, look at what we can do, look what we can become. I mean, if you educate yourself, in the world. Like, you can, if you look at Iceland, they're 100% renewable. If you look at Iceland, they revolted. Okay, they got rid of the banks and all that kind of stuff, because when everything failed, they didn't just say, oh, it's okay, bankers, we know you made a mistake or whatever. They were like, no, you guys made a mistake, you're gone. We're not going to give you another chance. You completely ruined our economy. You know, yeah. We had faith in you and you broke, we had trust in you and you broke the trust. You know,
kind of like that whole shame on me once, you know, shame on me twice or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's who knows if it'll continue to be that way, you know, if it'll continue to be peaceful. But I'm not so naive to think that utopia is you know, can happen overnight or even happen in general, you know. Well, but we can at least attempt.
And I don't either, you know. That's the ultimate dream, you know. But you know, it's obvious you're not going to get everybody to agree on so much as, you know, where to have a dinner together, you know, let alone, you know, solving all the issues of the world, because there's a lot of selfish people in the world that don't care about anybody but their own. And, you know, so with that said, you know, you got a heck of a hill to climb if you're ever to make the whole utopia / heaven on earth thing, but the possibility is there.
Yeah, if we were to make our society, you know, our social structure, instead of for like a each for their own type of thing, capitalism, you know, you capitalize on a situation, you know, and the idea of, you know, hierarchy, like somebody is more privileged or can get more than somebody else, you know, and instead, you know, we incorporate all of the things we've learned, you know. I mean, people say, oh, you know, you're a communist or you're a socialist or you're a capitalist or whatever, but really all of those things are in our social structure. No matter what, it doesn't matter if you want to label it that or not. If you live in a community, you're a communist. You talk to people and go to social gatherings, you're a socialist. You know what I mean? You pull the fruit off of the vine when it grows, you know, or you know, whatever it is that you're growing, or go to the store to feed yourself. You're a capitalist. You're capitalizing on the situation. So,
well, my wife did a show on labels, and labels can be, you know, pretty devastating to the society. And so I understand exactly what you're talking about. I mean, take the preppers, for example. You know, people mock the preppers because they, you know, for whatever reason, whether they think Planet X is coming to get them or the power grid's going down or whatever, preppers are the guys and gals who, whenever a major calamity happens, they're not the ones up there trying to get in line and fight with each other over food and resources. They already got theirs. They're sitting back and you know, doing their own thing.
They're getting it done is what they're doing. And they're creating this self-sufficient. They're doing what they know how to for their families to, you know, ensure survival. And that's really what it all comes down to. Everybody on the earth, if besides a spiritual connection, you know, if you don't believe we share a spiritual connection, we sure do share the will to survive.
Oh yeah,
shelter, water, you know.
And everyone's born with the same question in their mind: where did we come from? How did we get here? Some people think they got it figured out. Well, maybe they don't. You know, maybe I don't have it figured out. But what I do have figured out is somewhere along the line of my life, which hasn't been, you know, a smooth path by any means, somewhere along my line, I recognized that common sense was the best go, because with common sense, at least you can know that when you put your hand in the fire and it hurt the first time, chances are when you do it a second time, it's going to hurt again.
Yeah.
You know, so why repeat it? You know, if it doesn't work, you know, then, you know, learn from that and move on. Right now, what we've got going on as far as our supposed representation of the world is, it isn't working. You know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are looking to the future instead of being in the present and learning from the past. They're just in the future already. They're already thinking five steps ahead of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and, you know, this needs to happen and all that stuff. And in doing that, they neglect some of the lessons learned in the past.
Well, a wise man once said that if you ignore history, you're bound to repeat it. And so, you know, what truer statement can you get, you know? Stick your hand in a fire, it burnt you. You ignored the fact that the first time you did it, it burnt. And you stick it in there as many times as you want, you're going to get the same results.
Yeah. instead of displaying your scars proudly. You know, a lot of people try to cover them up.
Yeah. And so, you know, people talk about reaching true enlightenment. You know, if you're ever going to reach true enlightenment, first you're going to have to sit down and use some common sense and kick your ego off to the side for a second and take in consideration somebody else's thoughts and views. And maybe something that they got is beneficial to what you got, you know. It's like that whole 500-piece puzzle thing that I keep saying, you know. You can take a 500-piece puzzle and you can slam it on the floor and see how many times it takes you to one time out of all the times that you slammed it on the floor just magically fall right into place and it's all perfect. Everything's done, you know. Or you can ask your brothers and sisters out there, hey, grab a couple pieces and help me put this thing together, you know. You see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah. Empathy. That's one of the things we call it, empathy. Our connection. If you look at somebody who's suffering and hurting, you naturally get the feeling that they have of suffering and hurting. That's a true spiritual connection. You know, you're relating to them.
How many people can look at a baby with a tear in his eye and not feel something?
If somebody is like that, it means that they're very locked into their mind, very locked into their ego, and not thinking about, they're thinking too much, I guess.
Yeah, it's not my problem. Change the channel, exactly. Out of sight, out of mind, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Until everybody, you know, like I said earlier, it sounds kind of terrible. It really does. That, you know, I wouldn't wish any calamity on anybody, but. In order for mankind to actually figure out that, you know, we either work together or die, it may take something that big. It's kind of like the family thing, you know. You got a family, and families are wonderful, wonderful things, you know. You get in a fight with, like, let's say you get in a fight with your uncle, you know. And so you guys ain't talking to each other for years, or your brother or your sister. You guys don't talk to each other for years because you're pissed off because one or the other offended the other. And then, you know, suddenly, you know, you just don't talk to them. Or maybe you just don't have the time to talk to your family. And then, you know, suddenly the whole family's in chaos. Everybody's scattered out all over the place. And then one of them dies. Well, now you got everybody in the family come together to put this individual in the ground and give them their last rites and all this kind of stuff here. And it took that one tragedy to bring that entire family together. And I'm saying, I'm hoping, like heck, it don't take World War III to bring this world together, because if it does, by the time the family gets together, we're all screwed anyway. We're back to caveman, you know?
Well, honestly, I mean, if you look around, it's already like that. We've already seen those lessons. You know, you think once we saw the first atomic, not that I was alive for this, but once you saw the first atomic bomb drop, you knew that would have woken people up.
Oh yeah, but what did they do instead? Instead of realizing that, hey, look at the destruction that we created, oh no, we went out and we built thousands of freaking bombs that were even more powerful than the one we dropped.
Yeah, here's where, you know, the threshold of conspiracy theory began, is like, you know, after World War II, you saw what America did. I mean, this is just from America's perspective, you saw all these people get together and recycle and all work together. Everybody was working together for the war effort, and everybody, you know, was trying to stop what was going on. Well, people who were making a bunch of money off of World War II from all the weapons being made and everything that they were, you know, that they could accumulate, all the resources they were gathering and everything, they saw this mass, you know, and they're like, oh my goodness, look at what we can do. If we can bottle this energy, we can use it to conquer the world, you know, because that's what they were thinking about themselves, right? Ego, right?
Yeah.
Well, most of us kind of bought into that idea, and quite literally bought into that idea. I mean, we the gold standard went away in like 1972, you know, and all these, we just slowly went on this path of an industrialized military complex, right? We have this idea that we just have to keep creating and consume, where, you know, pretty soon there's not going to be any more consuming because we're taking so much more than we need that, you know, it's going to make an imbalance. It makes an imbalance, you know, that we're all connected all across the world. And then we have these patriotic and nationalistic type of ideas, like, you know, America's the best or Russia's the best, and we support, you know, I guarantee there's tons of people who watch the Olympics, right? Well, the Olympics is just a corporate sponsoring of all the countries to bring corporations.
Yeah, with million-dollar commercials to sell you something.
Exactly. You know, and so long as we keep buying into that and watching those things and buying those products, it will continue to happen. So that's why I say the change really has to come from the individual. You know,
one example of what it was you were talking about is the sheer waste of food here in America alone, and I'm positive it happens all over the globe. There's people supposedly starving, yet we're throwing food in the trash.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, if you know, there's a couple of great models of you know, social structure or economy, however you want to look at it. I'm just going to throw these out here. Just be completely objective and skeptical all you would like. But the Venus Project is an excellent model. And then Charles Eisenstein, he has something called sacred economics. And both of those models can work together. Or, I mean, just take a look at those. You can YouTube a short video of either one of them, and they have some very good logical and empathetic type of tie-ins to how we can conduct ourselves as people. And it's not, by no means is it utopia, but it certainly is better than this idea of a fiat currency where we're all battling against each other, you know, and there can be only one at the top, you know.
Well, with that said, and the actual folks that are actually behind the scenes of some of those projects, there's two phrases that really bother me the most, and that's the ends justifies the means and collateral damage. Because to get to the utopia, if you got to go through all these wars and all the stupidity to get there, or if you got to kill people in the process to get there, then there's really something seriously wrong with that scenario, such as the Georgia Guidestones. On there it has a number of how many people the Earth could, you know, they want to get the population down to this certain number or whatever, you know.
But that's ludicrous. I mean, okay, the way that we conduct ourselves right now in America, for example, we could not have a population like a you know, right now I believe we're at what are we at now as far as billions?
I think we're last I heard we're like 320 million.
Oh, in America, but what about worldwide? 13?
Oh, I'm not sure in the whole world.
I can't quite remember, but I know that it's exponentially growing, right? It's just like technology, like practically doubles every year.
Yeah, right? But I disagree with the whole exponential growth for one particular reason. Is I feel nature is in charge, and if we get too overpopulated, there will be diseases that'll take down populations naturally, you know. And
I 100% agree with you, but this is my point, is that there is no what I'm trying to say is there is no overpopulation. There is only overabundance of ignorance, right?
I can agree 150,000% with that.
Yeah. So I mean, if we as a people are all conducting ourselves in a you know, self-sustaining manner, and in fact giving more than we're taking when we come into this world, we could have, you know, trillions, a population of trillions, especially if we stop fighting over, you know, petty resources and things like that, and we start realizing, hey, we live in a universe of abundance, and we can go into space to get more resources that we need if we can just utilize the ones that we have now without fighting over them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And tell me what it would hurt for, like, let's say a restaurant or whatever, to how would it affect their budget? You know, if you could get the red tape out of the way as far as lawsuits and medical and all that kind of stuff, how would it affect a restaurant's budget say, like at the end of the day, instead of throwing their food in the garbage, that they delivered it out to the needy or whatever, or, you know, just slightly short of where the time is that they can't legally sell it anymore or
some
give it away?
Some restaurants do that.
Yeah, well, there are some good folks that are on, you know, doing stuff, Meals on Wheels kind of thing, you know. But just think if the...
Like you were talking about earlier, like there's always about one bad apple, right? And right now, we don't have a fail-safe, right? There's no... The way our system's set up is if one person decides they wanted to take control of everything, or they think that they're privileged to, you know, my family's been doing this for hundreds of years, I can do this, and they're privileged to do so, they'll continue to do so and kind of muck it up for everybody else, right? So if... But if we have a fail-safe, you know, where we have our system set up not based on a monetary gain or a material possession type gain, but instead based upon how much you give in your life. Like, I, you know, I I give, even the most selfish people will want to give. You know, they want to give more than anything else. And so it's a conditioning matter. It's education, you know. And right now, we, you know, our governments that are in control, many of them, not all of them, don't want that, because then they'll lose their control. And it's like an ego thing. It's fear that you're going to lose something.
Well, it's the whole king factor, man. Because if you look at it, like all of our representatives, whether it be congressmen, senators, or whatever, we put them up on a pedestal. They're there to protect us. We feed them, and we feed them good. They have servants. They have protectors, you know, security groups and all that kind of stuff. So they're running around up there in this wonderful bubble, to where when they go to dinner, they can either have a steak or, you know, some caviar and some wine or whatever, you know. And meanwhile, the citizens down there, they don't have any protection. They don't have steak and caviar and all that kind of stuff. Some of them's eating, you know, cabbage soup or something like that, you know, and barely scraping by. But meantime, the leaders up there at the top, hey, you know, with their own protection, they want to take away everyone's rights to protect themselves and try to be, you know, like a nanny state or daddy or whatever. And in the meantime, you know, it's kind of like, practice what you preach, man. If you're going to sit there and say you're eligible to have a protector, then allow me to have my own protector, so on. You know what I mean?
I think it's like we're living in like a techno Rome, you know. It's like we've already seen this in nature. Well, technically, I guess so, but we've already seen this in human history, where it's plutocracy, right? We have the rich people who can amass enough money and resources to put people in power. It's really, I mean, honestly, it's really, the people don't put anybody in power. If look at it this way, we have congressmen and senators who've been sitting in seats ever since, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s. Where's the voting in that? There's not a whole lot of voting.
No. And when's the last time you ever seen a poor man get elected to office?
You haven't, and that's my point. The last rich guy who recognized that some of the things we were talking about, right, and who wasn't fearful of his life, was Kennedy, and look what happened to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was during the heart of our, you know, he saw the industrialized, you know, machine and it building up, and he could see that it was, you know, that you have the, you know, the Federal Reserve, and you've got the IRS, you got all these people behind pulling strings that don't want to be known. They just want to control, because that's their trip, you know, that's their game. They like the idea of power, you know. It makes them feel like God, right? But really, everybody is already should feel like that. And look what God does. God doesn't control things. God is self-realizing, self-awareness, and it moves and spreads love and gives, you know what I mean? In nature, that's really what it is. It's only the small groups of animals, like a wolf. It's like the wolf and sheep analogy. That's, you know, so classic.
Yeah, we're kind of like those two. We're kind of like those two sheep standing outside the cave, and the wolf is over there saying, "You know, it's cold outside. Come on in my house, and there'll be dinner and everything like that." You know, but what people aren't realizing is that when he's talking about there'll be dinner, you are on the menu, and we're saying, "No, you might want to think twice before you roll up in that cave." You know, and we're trying to get all these sheep to listen.
Yeah, and there's far more sheep than there is wolf, and there's a reason for that, because in nature, if there was all wolves, there wouldn't be wolves anymore, because there wouldn't be any more sheep. You see what I'm saying? All the wolves would eat all the sheep, and then the wolves would start dying. It's the balance in nature. So the emergent species, the species that give more than they take, you know, they eat the grass, and then they poop and make twice as much grass as they ate, and then they feed the wolves and everything like that. Those species do far better on this planet than a predatorial species. A predatorial species is very isolated in what it can do and where it can go, and what, you know what I mean? Because if it oversteps its means, nature quickly puts it back in its place. You know what I mean?
Nature always finds its balance, and that you can find that when you look at water. Water will find its own level. You can stretch a 50-mile hose out and put water in that, and if you measure it from the ground, you'd find out they're exactly the same height.
Yeah, it's like, now you're talking about Bruce Lee. We must be like water.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Bruce Lee, something's kicking me, so it's time for another music break.
All right,
we'll be right back, folks. We're coming up on the last hour of the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned.
The writing's on the wall, but if your mind's neglected, stop.
Tis the Terrible. All rise for the King, Shazam the Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table on No Borders, Awake Radio, We Roar, Shazoo's Radio, and many other networks out there. Appreciate everybody supporting all that kind of stuff. And you, too, can be one of the Knights of the Round Table just by showing up and calling in live or show up in the chat room, be an honorary Knight of the Round Table. Put some good links down there for good positive information for people, you know. If you're into alternative energy, check out my YouTube at, just go to YouTube and type in Shazizz, or you can find Shazizz pretty much everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, and all that kind of stuff. It's all about getting information out to people, you know. And I was thinking during this quick break right here was that, you know, if I were, you know, I got, I'm King Shazizz the Terrible, you know, I rule with an iron fist. But if I were really a leader of the world, I would want exactly what I got going on right here at the Knights of the Round Table. I would want the largest round table in the history of time, and I would want the average Joe to be the leaders. I would want the average Joe to be able to step up to the table and say, this is a problem that we have, and this is what we need to address. Can anyone help, you know, or whatever, as opposed to the way that it's done right now. See, essentially what we've done is we've given the doggone leaders of the world the key to the bus and told them, okay, you take us where you want to go, and we're going to trust you because we elected you, and so on and so forth. You know, you could probably debate whether some of them were elected or not, because big money has its hand in everything. However, when they're driving us off the cliff, there's only one thing that we can do. We got to be the ones to step up and say, hold on, and put our feet on the brakes, because when we go off the cliff, it's not just the leaders that's going off the cliff, it's us going off the cliff with them. You know, we're all in the same boat together. That's the analogy that I keep using about, you know, we're in this boat and our leaders keep punching holes in the side of the boat. Well, here at the Knights of the Round Table, it's about not punching holes in the side of the boat, but patching them holes and putting positive information out there and things to think about as far as education, alternative energy, alternative food, medical, so on and so forth. And so we got people from all nations, from places over in Ireland and Russia and China and America and Canada and in Mexico and everywhere. You know, you're all welcome to come to the table, because here at the table, there really is no leader, and there really is no king. The king is just a, you know, on here on the Knights of the Round Table, it's a kind of mockery. If you listen into our lead in on and our lead out of the show, where we're talking about Monty Python's Knights of the Round Table and constitutional peasants, it's just a, you know, it's just a funny way to say that what's going on out there in the world with our leaders, it's not working. It's not working for us. And so we need people of all nations to come around this table and sit down, the average Joe. And when dinner time comes together, we have dinner together, you know. We have what average Joe has, you know, some fried chicken and some potatoes and some corn and biscuits and gravy or whatever, you know. And we don't put ourselves above people. One of the things that frustrates me in my own personal religious beliefs is whenever I go to church and I see that there's a pastor or a preacher and he's standing up on this pedestal and everybody's looking up to him as he's the leader, you know, he's the to the pathway. In my religious beliefs, you know, Jesus said, I'm the way, you know, no man coming to the Father except through me. So with that said, the pastor or the shepherd or whatever should be on the same level. If I was a pastor of a church, I would be standing on ground level looking these folks eye to eye, or sitting in a chair in front of them and talking to them as if they were my equals, because according to my beliefs, they are my equals. No man was created above one another. We're all equal in the eyes of my God. And we're all equal in the eyes of humanity. There's no difference between the people of all races outside of the physical differences, maybe the color or height, size, weight, or whatever physical traits. You know, that's the only difference. We all bleed the same exact color. And so with that said, if I was the preacher of a church, I would want to sit down in a chair next to my brothers and sisters around the world and preach my beliefs to them and talk to them and discuss and find solutions to problems and work things out. This is why I like the Knights of the Round Table so much, is because it gives everyone a voice. You haven't heard us coming on here criticizing one another because maybe one has a different point of view. What you've heard us coming on here respectfully talking back and forth to one another and finding solutions, pointing out the stupidity of the same cycle that we keep repeating over and over again. So it would be, you know, in my best case scenario, it'd be the best dream of mine if we could get a worldwide, the hugest table going on, to where the average Joe can go up and talk to the average Joe, and the average Joe is just as much leader as the guy standing next to him or sitting next to him, whatever the case may be. No man should be above one man or one woman either. You know, we are all here together. We are all human beings. We all have the same goals, hopes, and aspirations and dreams. We all want to see our children grow up in a happy world, a safe world, and all that kind of stuff. So what we have to do is stop putting the keys to the bus in the hands of madmen who can't get it right. You know, how many times do you have to stick your fingers in the fire to understand that it hurts? We're seeing things going on in society that are just beyond all imagination. Like, from my perspective, I can't see any reason why there should be a starving baby in this world. We have the resources to feed that baby. If we have the resources to go over and bomb a nation into the Stone Age and turn them into a third world status, then we also have the resources to go over and feed that starving baby. Pick that baby up out of the dirt. Give him some medical attention, him or her, and put a blanket and some clothes on that baby, you know, and keep that baby warm. It's like, you know, if that was your child, you would pick your child up and you would love that child. You would hug that child. You would keep that child warm and safe. Well, brothers and sisters of the world, I'm here to say that child is your child. That child is part of you just as much as your child is part of you. Maybe the bloodline might be different, you know. Maybe the color might be different. But we lose that child, we lose a chunk of humanity that can never, ever be replaced. And to me, it's just ludicrous to sit by, idly by, while we kill one another on a regular basis. It just saddens me to the core to know that somewhere in some portion of this world that somebody is being done wrong, or somebody is suffering in any form or fashion, whether it be starvation or sickness or whatever. We have the power, the tools, the technology. We got the power of the spoken word. We got the power of the pen. We got the power of our actions. And together, united around this table, we can all come together and find the solutions and enact these solutions and motivate one another to believe in ourselves. You know, I feel, like I said earlier, that my own personal religious beliefs, my own personal spiritual journey via the Bible, I don't believe the Bible's written in stone. I don't believe that it has to come to pass that we come to Armageddon or Doomsday. I believe that if all of humanity could really, truly be enlightened within themselves, to go out and enlighten others, to feel that they are worthy, just as worthy as the guy that's actually out there preaching the cause. If we could only do this, if we could only keep throwing those positive pebbles into the pond that would resonate all the way through the entire world, throughout generation to generation to generation, and recognize that the things that we've done in the past, remembering the history, pointing out the history, look, we went down that road, it did not work the first time, it did not work the second time, it did not work the third time, and so on down the line. So here we are now as enlightened individuals, sitting around the table of humanity, sharing bread with one another on an equal level. You're not above me and I'm not above you. That is the ultimate dream of a utopia, heaven on earth, that may be totally unachievable as long as mankind is in its infancy, such as we are today. Because you got greed, you've got corruption, you've got lies, and everything that you could possibly think about, negativity, things that keep our backs against the walls for self-preservation that we can't fight against alone. However, together, We can destroy all the evil in the world by using what we know in our heart to be right and true. Right and true is that that baby's starving. Right and true is that we get up off of our couches, we put down our games and our TVs, and we go out there and we put food in that belly of that baby, and we take care of that baby. We nurture that baby to grow up, to believe in itself, and to be a free and independent individual that can go out there and benefit society as opposed to ending up in some jail somewhere. Does any one of the Knights of the Round Table disagree with anything I just said?
I don't think I can describe
it. Good stuff, good stuff. Am I coming through clearly now?
Yes, you are.
Crystal.
Yeah, that's good, that's good. I sorted out the microphones. It was Cyber Cafe. I didn't set it up right.
Well, let's hear your voice before your connection goes down. Say what's on your heart, brother.
Oh, lots of things. I'm sitting here and it's lovely 20 degrees in Spain, you know, feeling sorry for you guys in minus 40.
Yeah, that's me.
But I still think that the weather you're getting is from HARP. It's not normal weather. I looked the weather forecast California the other day and I saw the jet streams are going over California where normally they go over Washington State. So they pushed the jet stream further south and they dragged the cold air down from the polar regions down to America.
That's good. California needs the water.
Well, between
well,
the...
That doesn't bring California the water. It brings them a bit of a shower which creates floods, but it doesn't give them a whole lot of water. It just creates more chaos.
Between the tampering with nature, between the natural cycles going on, between all the different things that man are doing. Now, I'm not a global warming freak by any stretch of the means, but we do pollute our own environment on a ground level. And so with that said, you know, that's why if you go down the city, you'll notice that people are sick, sicker than if you go out in the country and see other individuals who live a little bit more healthy and down to earth. So, you know, regardless of where it's coming from, we've got to get it under control, because if we don't, you know, nature is going to do what nature does. And if that means kicking humanity to the curb, you can best believe that we're going to get kicked to the curb.
I don't know if control.
Well, by the way, guys, I met a mechanic guy, and he told me a little something which might be interesting for people wanting to get more miles to the gallon and burn their fuel better instead of polluting the atmosphere. He had a V6 in the 60s, and they were told that if you made steam go into the engine, they get more miles to the gallon. So they wrapped a copper tube around the exhaust pipe, and then they fed water through it and put steam into the engine. And it wasn't exactly scientific, but he figured somewhere between 10 and 20% miles to gallon.
Well, there is so much that we could be different, and I don't mean by control. I don't mean that you know, we control everything around us. What I mean is steering this boat to the right doggone direction. You know, leaving nature to nature. You know, and trying to be respectful. You know, it's like if I'm driving down the road and I just got my dinner at some fast food joint, instead of throwing that freaking trash out the doggone window, use it for something constructive, you know?
Yep. Or don't get the fast food in the first place.
Yeah, there you go. Cook for nature. I'm just saying.
Don't get the fast food in the first place.
I'm just saying, if you're gonna walk down that path, at least don't trash it on your way through, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Be aware of what you're doing and how you're contributing.
Yeah, apparently KFC chickens used to be Kentucky Fried Chickens because used chickens. But apparently the reason they changed the name to KFC is because they don't use chickens anymore.
Yeah. Well, please don't tell me what they do use, because I might decide I want to go to the chicken house one day and get some dinner or
something. A chicken that you're eating, what they seem to have done is they cut off the beak of the chicken and they stuff a tube down it, and the chicken is quite often a genetic thing.
Sometimes
like four arms.
Looks like the chicken house is out for me now.
It's Frankenstein-like chicken.
I mean, you don't want to eat
Franken chicken.
You don't know what it is.
Any processed food, anything that's been processed heavily by man is probably
trash.
Probably not the best for you, you know. But it sure does taste good. I'll tell you that much.
Oh,
oh no, I used to eat Kentucky Fried as well. It tasted good, but a couple of years ago I stopped eating pretty well anything from any of these big corporations because they seem to be putting weird.
Well, see, these are things that we need to know ahead of time, but, you know, like I said, you know, you see these doggone terrifying stories on there where people are spitting in people's food at fast food restaurants and stuff like that. I don't know what kind of disgusting individual would do something like that, but that just destroyed...
appreciate their job.
Yeah, that just destroyed the whole experience for me, so now I think I'm going to become one of them vegetarians and grow my own garden and eat only things that I know that ain't genetically altered or bug sprayed all the you know what.
You look at it this way, and you don't have to be a vegetarian, but at least if you know how your meat died, I mean, if you in a slaughterhouse, a wholesale slaughterhouse, I mean, those animals are all packed together. They communicate with each other, and when one down the line is screaming for bloody mercy, you know, the animals who haven't got to that point yet are starting to freak out and panic a little bit. Well, adrenaline is a natural poison in your body. When you pump adrenaline, it's a fight or flight response, you know, and it's to get you out of sticky situations. And if that adrenaline doesn't leave in sweat or in urine or whatever, it gets trapped in the body, you're going to be eating that adrenaline when you eat that animal. Whoa. So if you were to go hunt your own meat and stuff like that, or grow your own meat, and you respectfully take the animal out and you know, respect it and use as much as you can of it, then, you know, there's something to be said in that. I mean, you're taking responsibility for eating that meat, you know, and killing that life.
Yeah, and when they go putting, like, growth hormones in cows and stuff, and kids are drinking the milk, and, you know, next thing you know, either one, somebody's growing boobs or a third eye or something's wrong.
You've got thyroid issues, all kinds of stuff. Your endocrine system is all messed up.
Well, yeah, the other big problem is, you see, in theory, we're supposed to give back to nature what we take. So when we eat an apple and we do a poo-poo down inside an apple tree, then the seed gets deposited and nature gets a chance to set the seed in motion.
Right.
But if we go and flush it down a toilet, we're cheating nature. We're taking from nature and then flushing it down the toilet.
Well, if you don't eat a lot of processed foods and you eat a lot of raw foods and you take all your excrement, right, which is naturally there for a reason, and it goes back into nature, you can recycle your own fertilizer. I mean, I know we're all been conditioned to that disgusting, but if you take care of it and you bury it or whatever, you can make
full circle. It's called full circle nature, natural system.
Well, so
that's what the Chinese always do that for thousands of years. They did their business in that.
So
they threw it in the fields.
Why doesn't the education system teach people, the children coming up about things such as that? You know, I know that's really kind of a disgusting sounding way to talk about it, but fertilizer is fertilizer, no matter how you want to look at it. But why aren't they teaching? Why aren't they teaching kids how to be self-sufficient and real science and real history and stuff like that? There's an agenda behind the whole deal, you know, call it conspiracy or whatever you want.
Communism. Communism does not want any independence. You're to be dependent only on the state, and if you don't toe the communist line...
Well, when all these systems with labels aren't succeeding, and people are still trying to use these systems, what's wrong with my idea about the big, huge round table where the average Joe comes up there and sits down and discusses respectfully, you know, ideas and solutions, you know?
Or organic, like an organic. I mean, we're all organisms. And the word organic comes from origin and organisms, right? And so organic is not currently it's a selling point. Right, because we live in a society that's very, very rooted in ego. Like, I'm going to make something off this. I'm going to capitalize off this. This is going to be mine. The idea of ownership and control of things. But when we all come together and work a natural, organic patterns and progression, you know, then we can move with it. We can create systems that are already there. We're just kind of moving along with it, you know, and become aware of how things work a little better. You know, it's kind of like the Native Americans, like, and a lot of other cultures, you know, tooth decay and cancer, and those things did not exist until Westerners came over and then started introducing sugar and starches and processed foods and alcohol, and then, you know, here's guns. Guns are a tool, right? But it's a tool to kill things. I mean, that's really what a gun's for. And then we get everybody becomes conditioned into these ideas that, you know, this is just how we do things. This is who we are. Like, we can't change. But everything changes. I mean, eventually we'll die, right? So let's look, like you say, let's bring everybody to the table and talk about, you know, ways that we can change things. It's through progression rather than telling people that they're wrong for doing something.
I saw a movie one time on YouTube that really, really freaked me out, but it kind of inspired me as well. There was a movie where this one particular planet had the people, they were walking around, and there was a crowd of them. They were all crowded together, and one of the people in the crowd would say, "Does anybody need any bread?" You know, and somebody would raise their hand, and they would give them some bread. "Does anybody need some water or fruit or whatever?" You know, and they were helping each other out. And on one sense, it kind of scared me a little bit. Because of the way that it was, you know, it's kind of hard to explain. It has to,
like, you have no soul. Right?
Yeah, it has to do with kind of like change, or, you know, but essentially what it was literally a utopia. Everybody was taking care of one another, and then this one particular individual went to our society and you know, saw water and went to drink out of this water, and turned out the water was like, had chlorine and stuff like that in it, and it was like coming from heaven and going to hell, literally, and, you know, not being able to experience what it was that you understand what I'm saying. We're coming from that zone to this zone right now, the big change.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I think that we're all unique expressions of God. You know, we're all that, and we all have our own contribution to life, and our own lessons we need to learn from one another, you know? And you know, that utopia idea, if you look at the patterns in nature, right? Like, you see birds, and all of a sudden, birds don't have one leader. They're all leaders, right? Of a sudden, they'll all change directions in the middle of the sky. And, you know, that's hard for us to comprehend, but they're connected through thoughts, and just one thing might cue them off. One person says, "Hey, let's go this way." Or one bird says, "Hey, let's go this way." They all kind of follow. And then other bird says, "Oh, this might not be a good idea." Or two birds say, "This isn't a good idea." And they work together as one giant organism for safety. Well, right now, we're kind of like, you know, this goes back to the wolf analogy, but we're kind of like wolves. You know, we have little independent packs, and we have leaders of those packs, a hierarchy, you know, the alpha and omega type of system. And that worked for us for many years, but eventually we're going to have to evolve and become more like a school of fish or more like birds, because if we want to have massive population, you know, we have to go according to the balance of nature, you know what I mean? And you don't have to believe that or whatever, and you know, that's your own path to find, but that's just the perspective that I see, you know?
Well, coming from my religious beliefs, in Genesis, it said that God created man in his own image, which makes us creators. We create our own pain, we create our own suffering, we create our own destiny, our own wars, and so on and so forth. So with that said, instead of creating all the pain and the suffering and the diseases and the wars and all the madness that we do, if we could just turn that around and use those same resources to actually do good in the world, that's the point of view that I'm coming from. Yeah, am I wrong?
I don't think so.
There's actually a group in Switzerland that have some sort of gizmo that generates electricity from nothing. A kind of religious group. And
the Estatica.
Yeah, the Estatica. I don't know how it works exactly, but it spins around and it's
electrostatic and converting and so, cascading energy. Yeah, it's really cool. I've been looking into it a lot.
Now, I don't know if they got a round table to sit around and discuss the ideas, but over 30 or 40 years they've been discussing different things that they tried experimenting with until finally they got that machine.
Well,
work and supplies all the power they need for their little
That's a wonderful point.
For anybody out there who does not believe that we are literally floating in a sea of energy, try this one time. Go out sometime when the skies aren't all chemtrailed, the you know what, and look up in the sky. Don't stare at the sun, but just look up at the sky, and don't close your eyes. Just keep your eyes wide open and look at the sky. You will literally see something that will amaze you. There are things moving around out there. Things that you can see in broad daylight. You can see them with your own two eyes. We are literally floating in a massive sea of energy. And so with that said, the whole concept of free energy, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for. See, what we're doing, and I keep saying that all the alternative energy guys out there and the groups, they keep making the same mistake. They're trying to find some sort of zero point or free energy system that can run the inefficient appliances that we buy from the stores just like they are now. So you're trying to achieve almost nearly the impossible. These things were made deliberately inefficient. If you took a doggone washing machine, for example. Why does that washing machine have to run off 120 volts AC when there's a 12 volt DC motor that will turn that washing machine just as well? You know,
it's so, just a matter of changing that power.
Put
demand there rather than Well, also if you look at it like this, two things. One, this is kind of I guess it'd be semantics, but the very word free energy. Free means there's no cost, there's no monetary value to it. So in our thinking, free energy doesn't exist because we live in a society where nothing is free.
Yep.
So that's the real, but alternative energy, that's a more politically correct way to say it, I guess. But the entire world, like you say, and the universe, it seems, is all energy. Even matter is energy, just vibrating certain vibrational frequencies and stuff like that. When you're trying to do something like a power energy through copper, you have to realize that you're putting that energy into a certain perceived environment, right? You're running it through copper, and copper has a certain vibrational frequency, and most conductors have certain energetic perception, so to speak, or a certain way that they vibrate. So if you continue to do the same things by trying to run copper coiling and all that kind of stuff, you're going to get the same results over and over again because you're putting it into that frequency range, in matter, using matter that we have, right? So, which is basically just energy at a very slow, rate of movement. But yeah, I completely agree with you. If you keep doing the same thing, you get the same results.
My brain has killed me here. What's the lead in the pencil made out of?
Graphite.
Okay. Well, I watched a video from a Russian guy who does a lot of Russian really cool science stuff. And,
Paralytic graphite, I know the one.
Yeah, and he had a little square piece of graphite, and he had some neodymium magnets, and he set the graphite in the center of these neodymium magnets, and the graphite literally hovered above the deal. So there's energy going on right there. And as long as he didn't interact with it, that thing would just sit there and float forever until the magnet completely wore out,
I have some of that if you want some. I can break you off a little piece. I got a pretty big piece of it.
Well, that'd be pretty cool.
I've experimented with it.
But I'm just,
Yeah, well, that's another principle. Is like the idea of separating and compartmentalizing science in the sense that gravity and magnetism could be very much interlinked because we have not fully understood electromagnetism. We bunched them together.
Well, right? My belief, gravity and magnetism are one and the same.
I agree. I personally believe that too, and this is why, is because electricity is like a thought. It's like the energy behind the matter, right? And magnetism is like the force, the form of that energy, of what you're creating. That's why you can create magnetic fields using energy, right, in different oscillations and different force, different amount of force and stuff like that. Usually amperage makes a bigger magnetic field. It's not necessarily the voltage. But then again, you look at like a Tesla coil, and a Tesla coil is taking very little amperage in a sense. I mean, it's artificially inducing amperage through frequency, but it's two different entities interacting with each other to create a step up of voltage exponentially. With that said,
NASA wants to build 4 satellites to send them into space to try to get a 3D model of coupling and decoupling of magnetic fields coming from the sun. And I'm saying, this just, what a waste of money, because you could do the same doggone thing right here on Earth for cheaper. You take 4 coils and, set all your instruments up, you can see the difference in why the coupling and decoupling happens. With Tesla coils, you can find the same thing out. You fire your coil up, and then you'll notice that whenever you put, like, a fluorescent bulb, you'll notice that the field kind of decreases off the, if you got one fluorescent bulb lit up on the other side of the room, when you put that other bulb inside there, the field will couple to that bulb, and you'll see a decrease in the deal. So these two fields are interacting with each other. The sun and the Earth are interacting with each other, and the only reason why they don't suck together like a magnet is because the magnetosphere of the Earth and the magnetic field of the sun are not constant. They're not staying on all the time. They fluctuate depending on how much current's actually going through all the minerals of the Earth. You know, we got, like, the Earth has a hot molten metal core, and as it's spinning around, and all that heat is creating a thermoelectric charge, which in turn is energizing the planet, creating a magnetic field, and that will fluctuate depending on, like, when the moon goes around us, it shakes up that core and kind of interferes with that field being created for just a brief second, long enough to shut that field off and turn it on. And so the coupling and the decoupling come from when the changes of the sun and the changes of the Earth's magnetic field are either weakening or stronger. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a kind of a perception and environment type of principle. Like, you know, you have resonance, and you can find that resonance of certain fields and certain environments. You know, and so all we got to do is just make the circle a little bit bigger. You know, my personal belief is, people talk about solid state or closed circuit systems. There is no such thing. Things are always interacting with each other. You can't have a completely closed system. Even in a vacuum, unless you were to completely isolate the environment 100%, which, to my knowledge to this day, is not necessarily possible. Because once you put perception into the situation, you're creating a whole other universe, basically.
If you take a magnet, for example, and you put magnet paper over a magnet, you'll notice that field stays constant. I mean, there's a field there. And in order to extract energy from that field, you have to disrupt that field. Like the electrons in a coil of wire, copper has an extra electron on it, and so when that magnetic field is passing that copper, it shakes that extra electron off, which doesn't deteriorate the copper. I mean, you still always have the same number of electrons. They just trade places, and then that trading places create a field that releases energy that you can tap into.
Or it's like plucking a string. You're basically just plucking a string of your guitar, and you're making a vibration, right?
But yeah, the sound don't come out until that interaction occurs.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
So with that said, knowing that's basic science, but knowing that you act on that, there's several different anomalies that you could put together that would really create the free energy device that everyone seeks. You know what I mean?
Harvesting, yeah. You harvest which the energy that's naturally abundant. My personal opinion is, if you look at the Coulomb force, a lot of things that there's quite a few people working on this now, but if you look at the Coulomb force, everything can be measured in the Coulomb force. It's basically the interaction and the transition of energy from one state of existence to another, and the amount of charge that's built up, right? The amount of potential between that. And the Coulomb force is kind of like that electricity delivering its thoughts to create things, you know, delivering its energy to create things. And so through that Coulomb force, if you can harvest high voltages and learn how to create to bring the frequency down, or kind of smooth out the lightning bolt, so to speak, you know, bring that energy down, then you can use it into more applicable means. I think that's what Tesla did. I think that's a lot of people who are.
That's what I'm doing with my plasma reactor.
That's exactly right. You're trying to bait the electrons out of the earth, or the boson pairs, or whatever. There's many different theories behind it, but yeah, that's exactly right. You're trying to, and you know, and people say, oh, well, then you know. Some people say, oh, but then you're going to mess with the Earth's magnetic field or all that kind of stuff. No, it's a cyclical thing. It's not like you can just take it and it just disappears.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Two magnetic fields will become one magnetic field. And you can check this out for yourself. You can take two transformers and you can energize these two transformers and put magnet paper on there. Start off turning one on. You'll see the field created. Start off turning the next one on. And the moment you energize both of these, nature will balance itself out, and it will literally create one field around two power supplies.
Yep, around two cores, because it's always it's just either.
Guys, I gotta go, but I just saw it for you, great chat you're having there. Just something unexpected popped up. But before I go, I just wanted to put an idea out there for you. I'm looking at the idea that when you put steam into a hot engine, the steam is actually breaking into hydrogen and oxygen.
I believe it is too.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because the way to make hydrogen in the old days was you put steam down a gun barrel through a big charcoal fire, and out the other end came some hydrogen, and that was how they did it before they had electricity. So if you put steam into a car engine and some of it turns into hydrogen and oxygen and then explodes in the engine, you're going to get some extra amount of free energy, for want of a better word.
Well,
better ones.
In the old days, the farmers used to get their tractors up to operating speed and then inject water into the cylinders in a fine mist to use less fuel. With that said, exactly what you said is right.
Well, this is it. I mean, this is what this mechanic guy told me. They put the copper tube around. Now you have to figure a way of not putting water in when the engine's cold.
Yeah.
You know, so that it only puts the water in, the steam, when the engine's got up to head of steam. But the more I look into it, BMW are recycling the fuel that comes out of the engine and putting it back into the engine, they say, five times. And I suspect what's happening is the exhaust, when it goes out the engine, goes into generally a cast iron type of exhaust system.
Like what Justin's talking about, a catalytic converter.
Yeah, so there could be a catalytic converter action going on there where they're breaking the fuel or they're breaking the water or whatever, something into hydrogen, and that's why the BMWs are getting such good miles to gallon, some quite large engines.
Well, you do know that most all the exhaust pipes, they rust from the inside out because there's moisture build up inside that doggone thing. So something tells me between the temperature difference outside and the temperature difference inside, you're getting some condensation, but you're also getting some sort of hydrogen reaction inside there as well, because you're getting water out the other end.
They're called hydrocarbons. It's hydrogen and carbon.
Well, when the petrol does break down, it breaks down into carbon dioxide and water. But I suspect that in the early stages, as it's before it goes into the catalytic reactor, it's turning into hydrogen, loose hydrogen, which if you recycle it back into the engine, gives you a better burn.
And you're also sucking oxygen in through the intake as well. So there you go. You put the two together.
Oxygen has nitrogen and hydrogen.
BMW can't be stupid if they're recycling exhaust fumes back into the engine five times. They're onto something.
Yep.
Well, I mean, honestly, the Japanese back in the 80s came out with cars that could get, you know, 50, 60 miles per gallon, you know, they basically stopped putting them in production because of engineered obsolescence. They're not going to make any money off of a car that runs forever. You know, I mean, there's exactly. Some like Suzuki's and Toyotas and even old Bugs, you know, VW Bugs. I mean, they can last forever. You can beat the crap out of them and they still keep going because they're.
I got a 1993 Toyota and I'm about to buy another 1997 Toyota, and that era from the 90s are reputed to run forever.
Yeah,
and Toyota is now building in foot laws because they can't have cars that last forever. Otherwise,
because then people won't buy them anymore. You're ruining yourself as far as the market goes. You know, yeah. So,
well, you just touched on the key.
Not the best of built-in faults.
You just touched on the key. You can't sell no drugs if ain't nobody sick. You can't sell no bullets if ain't nobody going to war. You can't sell no cars if everybody's got a car that'll last forever. So if you want a car that's last forever, you're going to have to get we the people to build it, because they're not going to get it for you.
Yep. No, and that's why I'm saying, like, it's our economic and social structure.
Yeah, I gotta let you guys go. We'll catch you next Saturday, Sunday.
All right, thanks.
Ciao.
See ya.
Well, it looks like it's just you and I now, brother. We're down to the last 15 minutes.
Sounds good.
This has been a fascinating show. There's so much information, you know. Actually, I think my spirits is a little bit lifted up now that we've had this.
I'm glad, man.
Long conversation, you know. Started off kind of down in the dumps because I'm thinking, you know, it's so overwhelming. I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've got up in the morning and I just ask myself, why am I doing this? You know, I think it's just a matter of impatience. Is because I wished I could stand before the world and say what it is that I need to say and hopefully they would hear. But, you know, this is best I got, and it just don't seem to be happening fast enough, if you know what I mean.
You just continue to emanate light, man. That's all about all you can do. That's all Jesus did. You know, that he just, and Buddha and Babaji. There's so many amazing spiritual avatars that did the same things, you know, over and over again. They just tried to make people aware that, you know, God is within all of us. It's within all things. You know, even Jesus said, he said, I am the Son of God. But he never said he was the only one. You know, did he say he was the only Son of God?
Well, I believe we're of God, you know. So, exactly. Like I said in Genesis, when it said man, God created man in his own image, and he gave us all the resources and everything we need to either destroy it all or build it up to be the most amazing thing.
That's exactly right.
That's where the whole free will came in.
Yeah, and that's our gift. We have free will. We have the ability to be the caretakers or destroyers of the planet. That's our gift. We have imaginative ability beyond the other animals on this planet, right? Beyond the other species on this planet. We have been given that gift. And whether we're the first ones, that's all speculation. Whether we're the last ones, that's also speculation. But we're talking about right now in the present and what we can do in the present.
Right here, right now. In the Bible, it also said, you know, blessed be the peacemakers and the meek shall inherit the earth. And so, you know, when all these folks end up destroying everything, whoever's left over, it might be that case scenario where they say, look what just occurred. You know, we just destroyed everything, and we got to learn from this. We got to not repeat this ever again. Otherwise, you know, I sometimes wonder if what you was talking about a second ago, if there weren't civilizations before us that made the same doggone mistakes and we're just repeating history, you know, who's to say that we're the first? Maybe the Earth was created in 6,000 years ago, or recreated 6,000 years ago, you know? Maybe all these things like on Easter Island or all these different pyramids or whatever, maybe those were lost civilizations that came about and then destroyed themselves, you know.
And even isolated incidences of it too. It doesn't have to be a worldwide phenomenon. It can be isolated if somebody just figures out the know-how. I mean, if you look at it technically, scientifically speaking, you know, we look at ourselves as Homo sapien as 85,000 years old, but yet we only have recorded history, like solid recorded history, maybe the past 6,000 years.
Yeah.
If even that.
And that
leaves a lot of room for speculation, and I mean, we found cities like in Turkey that have been there, you know, 10,000 years ago. And then here's another thing: is like if you look at the pyramids, for example, we can't get a good grip on how old the pyramids are because they are made out of something from the earth. So if you actually carbon date the pyramids,
you get
through their limestone, it's we're talking millions of years, not just thousands. And basically, they just took the limestone and altered it. Now we can date some of the hieroglyphs and stuff, but that stuff added upon thoughts over thousands of years. You know, it's like We don't know when it was really first built or why it was built. You know, all those things are still speculative.
Yeah, and once again, back to the whole recorded history thing, man. You know, we only know the history that was recorded on paper, what we can follow back. And who's to say that maybe the Egyptians didn't walk up there one day and see these pyramids up there and say, look, these are cool, let's go live in them or whatever, you
exactly.
know?
Yeah, I mean, I would do that if I was traveling across a barren desert, or maybe at that time it's still a jungle, but anyways, if I saw some marvel of engineering, I would be attracted to it and want to go understand it and learn from it, you know what I mean? I wouldn't. Or I'd be scared of it, one of the two, but those are kind of the response that you get here.
In the long term of it all, we don't know because we weren't there. Just like creation as opposed to the Big Bang Theory. Nobody right. knows because that both of them rely on some sort of magical force that created everything that is, and nobody was actually there when it actually started all the way up to the final process to where we are, where we're at.
How so, are they any different? There's yeah. really no difference.
So nobody...
thought.
Yeah, it's a theory or it's faith. It's your choice. That's the free will portion of the thing, man. But either way, now we are here in the here and now. Just like he was saying, we're here, we're now. We have what we got to deal with. We can either destroy it all or we can end up like past civilizations, or you know, maybe this is the only civilization and then we ended up as the book was written, you know. It was created and then it was destroyed and so on and so forth. Or we can look in this book or any other book and we can learn from the past mistakes of mankind, and we can go on and not repeat those past, feed the starving babies, take care of the sick, stop the wars and all the craziness. And you know, these are the thoughts on the madman of that I call myself, O King Shaziz the Terrible, ruling with an iron fist, you know.
Yeah, you know, like the pyramids could very well be a message from the past, saying, "Hey, you know, just like the Bible, just like you know, many holy books, you know, it's and writings on walls, ancient structures." I mean,
yeah. What if the Bible was just a warning? What if it was just a warning? You know?
Well, it's definitely a guideline and wonderful. I mean, it's the Old Testament is one of the most epic books, you know, ever created, pretty much. I mean, that book is epic. It's got some amazing stories in it, right?
Yeah.
And so they're just messages. You know, my personal translation of the Bible is that there are old stories that were passed on verbally with different names, probably for thousands of years before the Bible was ever written. And somebody decided, hey, why don't we collect all this information, all these wonderful stories that have good messages and teach people things, and we put it together in a book that people can understand.
Yeah,
you know, and then of course they get rewritten and rewritten, and it's like a game of telephone over the years. But
could be a simple case is they learned the whole lesson of repeating history, and they said, well, if humanity's ever survived, we need to put this book together with some basic common sense laws in it and some stories of old that we can point out to the future. If you go down that path, that's what you're going to get, because yep. we did it, and look where we're at. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. That's kind of my take on it. You know, lessons to be learned that our ancestors are trying to teach us more than just... I mean, because we do have all the thoughts of our ancestors. That's what our genetic makeup is. It is anything that you can think becomes a part of you. You're creating it, right? We are creators. And so we pass down information through genetic code and stuff like that, but we also pass it down through pure thought. And so those thoughts are trying, you know, our ancestors are most likely trying to pass on those thoughts, that things that they've learned. They're like, hey, you know, look, here's some mistakes we've made, like your parents do. You know, your parents say, hey, I made these mistakes in my life. You know, you try not to do this, because if you do this, this is what happens, you know. And some people still stick their hand in the fire, even though after your parents say no, you know, that same type of principle.
And as far as agreeing or disagreeing out there in the world, you know, if you're an atheist or a scientist and you choose theory over faith, then that's your own personal spiritual journey. Me personally, I choose faith because it works for me. So don't hate me because I'm a Christian or, you know, my beliefs. This is I wouldn't hate you because you're a non-believer, so on down the line. What the whole story is from beginning to end, if you want to classify it as just a nifty book with a warning to what things could occur or written in stone, stone or not written in stone. The fact of the matter is, in the here and now, what we've got to contend with affects each and every one of us on an equal plane. Because if this boat that we're floating on, if it goes down, it's not just me that's going down. It's not just the Muslim. It's not just the Buddhist. It's not just... it's everybody. Everybody goes down together when we go down. So if we start World War III and we blow each other up and murder one another, then everyone loses. You see what I mean?
I think that's very much true. But it's easy to look at the problems. The solutions are what we need, right? So the solutions have got to be... you know, if you look at Jesus' example, you know, you don't fight fire with fire. You're just going to make more fire, right?
Well, a simple solution to start is to plant a seed that will feed future generations. That's the start.
That's a wonderful start. And instead of bringing up arms and making a trigger finger, you know, hold out a hand and try to bring some water. You know.
Yep. Exactly. You know. Well, brother, we're down to the last 5 minutes, and our outro pretty much takes up that 5 minutes, so I'm going to give you the last word. If you got a YouTube or something, you need to put that out there so people can come subscribe to you and that kind of stuff, you know, and check out what you're working on. It's all about everybody bringing ideas together, alternative energy, alternative food, medicine, learning about the law, learning about life, and loving one another. That's the best I can say. So with that said, you got something you want to tell everybody?
Yeah, thank you. You can look me up on YouTube. My name's Dieden, and it's D-I-A-D-O-N. It's kind of a weird one. Dieden A. Theory and faith, they both interact with each other, and you know, you can be a man of faith and have a ton of theories, and you can be a man of theoretical thinking and have a lot of faith in what your theories are. It's really no different. So
yep.
With that said, thank you, everybody, and thank you, Shaziz. I appreciate it.
Yep, peace and love, everybody. And for those of you that come on Shaziz. ShazizRadio.com. If you go to the virtual labs, there's a button there you can click on. It has a link of the researchers, and I believe Dieden's link to his YouTube channel is right there, so there's some easy access for it in case you didn't catch the message. Anyway, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned. I believe live mic is coming up next, if I'm not wrong, and you know, stay tuned. So, with that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Old woman! What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers, by hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that our quiet dancing able. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Always the king, she fills the table, and the knights of the round table.